This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic.
Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest. If
no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
With all this anxiety over fuel security, is there something we're missing in the mix here in Australia? Biofuels. You can make them from stuff like sugarcane, vegetable oils. So how hard is it and why aren't we hearing more about them? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, we're going to be talking biofuels and speaking to some farmers.
To grow sugarcane for ethanol is a lot easier to grow than sugarcane for sugar.
We're also going to be getting into the impacts of the latest flight disruptions announced by airlines. So if you're thinking of travelling in the next few weeks and months, you might want to listen to that. Later, how is AI going to impact the way you're buying clothes? Maybe not the most obvious question, but some people are already using artificial intelligence to get themselves better deals. Sorry, we'll explain what's going on there. First, though,
Hack.
I didn't expect it to be that lonely out here because as I come from the countryside, but not like that.
On Triple J.
As the government continues to assure Australians everything's going to be okay, the Prime Minister keeps on his travels around the world to shore up our fuel supply. There are places here that are already feeling the big impacts of this fuel shortage outside of the cities, regional and remote areas. And some of the first to be affected have been farmers and backpackers. Backpackers playing a really important role in our economy. They keep a lot of farms ticking along. But heaps have started to lose their jobs. Janae Madden has this story from outback South Australia.
I'm not the biggest city girl at all because it's a little bit smaller, a little bit calmer. And I was very excited to have the opportunity to live in a proper outback, like far away from everything.
The German backpacker Jewel, a stint in the outback made sense. The 24-year-old is living on a remote sheep and cattle station in the Flinders Ranges in South Australia while she ticks off the regional work needed to extend her visa.
Yeah, everyone just told me, like, wait till there's Easter, wait till there's school holidays. It's going to be busy. It's going to be a lot of work. Like, for the pizza nights, it's going to be a lot of people. It's going to be exciting. We're just basically waiting.
Jewel was told to wait for the tourists, but this year they haven't really come.
After a couple of weeks, it started hitting a little bit.
Jewel cleans the station's tourism accommodation, and usually there'd be a couple of them doing the job.
So you just notice, oh, I'm in the middle of nowhere by myself.
But this year, the other worker got laid off in their first week.
I'm by myself. We don't have any other backpacker at the moment. We don't have any young people to talk to.
It's a struggle now to even keep work up to one worker, let alone having two people here.
Kelly is the station owner and says tourist numbers have halved mainly because of fuel prices.
That's the main reason, is just that people are not being able to afford it, but also the worry of being stuck here.
Outback operators aren't the only ones feeling the heat. The war in the Middle East has caused a massive spike in petrol and diesel prices, which means tourists aren't making big drives out bush and outback workers are getting laid off.
You know, I kind of envisioned to stay at least 3 months up here, so I'm probably only working about half of that.
Mark's in Unadatta, a tiny town 700 kilometres northwest of the Flinders Ranges. Only 100 people live there. The bright pink roadhouse where Mark works usually attracts loads of visitors, but now he's been laid off.
I would have liked to stay in South Australia, ideally, stay in kind of the regional areas.
And while he's looking for another outback job, he reckons he'll end up finding work closer to Adelaide.
Fingers crossed something will happen then.
The roadhouse owner Joe reckons he had to cut staff to save money after visitation numbers dropped 80% compared to last year.
As soon as the sort of war started and the price of diesel started going up, we cancelled two staff that were due to come. And then as time went on, it just became evident that we can't support the staff that we've got, like the casual staff that we've got. So we made the decision last week to let them go as well, unfortunately.
Back in the Flinders Ranges, Jewel's nervous about the isolation, but she's still loving the experience. She hopes visitors will come back soon.
But the biggest part would maybe be just have someone in my age around, which I could talk to or like experience some stuff, go exploring.
This is Hack
on Triple J.
Janae Madden reporting there and hearing from you on the text line on Hack's Instagram as well, talking about what this fuel price hike means for you, what travel is going to mean for you, because we know that Australian Airlines have announced this week they're cutting domestic flight capacity, they're increasing fares. We've got Qantas warning us of an extra $800 million in fuel costs that they're facing. Virgin saying they're also facing tens of millions of dollars more in fuel costs. And if you're in regional Australia, you might be worried about how this might impact your travel. And that might not be for pleasure. It might not be a holiday. It might be for medical reasons, or maybe you've got to travel for work. I want to know if you have been impacted by these flight changes that have been announced this week. Message in 0439757555. Someone keeping across this development is Ben Groundwater. He's a freelance travel writer. He's with us now. Hey, Ben, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Yeah, good to be here.
So Qantas has announced some pretty big cuts to regional services this week. Virgin has done the same. It sounds like there are quite a few routes here that are going to be impacted.
Yeah, there's four key routes, essentially, to some regions of Australia. Qantas has said that they're cutting 5% of their domestic services for May and June. So they're taking planes basically from their US routes and from their domestic routes and sending them off to Paris and Rome, which is obviously where everybody wants to go and going to spend the most money going. So the routes that they're cutting for 2 months, for May and June, is Melbourne to Hamilton Island, Melbourne to Coffs Harbour, and those are both operated by Qantas. And then there's two Jetstar flights as well that they're cutting, which is Sydney to Busselton and Darwin to the Gold Coast. And so after June, they're sort of going to have another look at that and decide whether to put those flights back on or not, depending on fuel cost and probably depending on how many tickets they're selling to Rome and Paris as well.
And I guess, yeah, combined with what's going on with Virgin Qantas, it must have some local tourism operators a little bit worried about the impact it's going to have on tourist numbers.
I think it would, yeah. I mean, particularly to those destinations that are having their services cut, because the key thing is there that there are no other direct flights with other airlines to get to those places. So, you know, people in Margaret River, which is a really big tourism region in Western Australia, those direct flights from Sydney to Busselton are huge. You know, they're fantastic for operators down there. And there are no other direct flights Sydney to get there. You have to go via Melbourne or you go via Perth and drive, essentially. So that's going to be a big hit. Hamilton Island as well. We're talking about May and June. It's not school holidays, so it's not totally peak season. But at the same time, those colder months are when people start wanting to go north to places like Hamo and to Coffs Harbour. So again, there's going to be a hit there for people who, people in Melbourne are probably going to have the bookings taken away from them. They'll have to think about whether they still want to go on those holidays or not. And I think, you know, there are some people who just won't go.
And we're hearing as well, away from the flights, that just the cost of fuel generally for people is having an impact. Like, we're seeing fewer backpackers on the road through some of those smaller towns in parts of WA, maybe Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland, that sort of thing.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's tough times across the board, isn't it? You know, interest rates are rising, the cost of living is going up as well as the cost of fuel. So, yeah, you know, I can tell you anecdotally, I'm in Byron Bay at the moment, I'm on a road trip. The traffic over Easter has not been anywhere near as bad as I thought it would be. I've just been staying in a caravan park. There are vacancies there, which over the Easter holidays, there just normally isn't at all. And this is Byron Bay, which is one of Australia's most popular tourist destinations. So certainly those ones out in the regions, those that are a little harder to get to, they're really going to be feeling the pain as well.
Are we at the point of seeing mass cancellations or not quite?
Not mass cancellations, but certainly some cancellations. You know, caravan parks and other operators have been reporting that people have been cancelling their Easter trip because of the cost of fuel, but also just the general cost of living as well, I think, is playing into that.
A few weeks ago before Easter, we saw some reporting from people saying we could start to see tourism operators implement surcharges, that kind of thing, just to make sure that they're not going under and they're still making a bit of money. Is that something that we have been seeing?
It's not something that I've seen and not something I've heard about. No one's told me about that happening yet. And I think, you know, people are really not going to be too happy with that, because already it's costing them to get to these places. And it's a sacrifice to still go on those holidays that they've booked. But at the same time, I know of operators who are offering, you know, discounts or fuel allowances for their employees just to be able to get to their job, because if they're in regional areas, they can't live in those places. They have to drive to get there. And obviously, just being able to get work is costing them more. So being able to provide those services as a tourism provider is costing more. So I don't know if supplements are going to come in, but price rises are certainly something that we could expect to see in the next few months for sure.
All right, this is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Ben Groundwater, a travel writer, about flight disruptions over the next few months due to fuel prices. It's been announced by our airlines this week that they're cutting some services, domestic services. Someone on the text line says, I think it's quite poor that Australia's own carrier is prioritising international flights over servicing our most isolated and rural areas at home. There needs to be more accountability for that. Another person saying, we went to Wilpena last June, so in South Australia, and it was booked out along with other accommodation on the surrounding stations. It must be devastating to the local economy. Ben, what about New Zealand? Because that's a place Australians love to travel to. Do we know if those services are being impacted?
It's not so much by the major airlines at the moment. So Qantas and Air New Zealand aren't cutting any services, but Jetstar is cutting 12% of its services from Auckland to Sydney and Auckland to Brisbane and vice versa, which is a huge amount. And so it's that sort of budget end of the travel market that's going to be hit. You know, already people don't have a huge amount of money, so those budget air carriers really are going to have appeal for their winter holidays. New Zealand is a very popular spot for that, so that's going to hurt for sure. And Jetstar is also cutting its domestic flights within New Zealand too, so even getting around New Zealand is going to cost more now.
Any advice on how Australians can support tourism operators? I mean, obviously, like you said, budgets are tight at the moment, but is there anything we should be keeping in mind over the next few months?
I think if you can still take your holidays, you know, take your holidays, go out to the regions, go out to the places that you love and or the places that you're planning to go to. It might take in some cases a little bit more hassle or a little bit more time to get there. It might mean taking road trips instead of flying. It might mean flying into a nearby centre and then hiring a car to get to those places rather than being able to fly in direct. And you know, obviously there are people who are not going to be able to do that, and that's fine. But if you can swing it, I think it's important to keep that industry running and to go out and have a good time and spend your money in places where people need it, for sure.
And is this the time of year generally when it is a bit slower and people aren't venturing out too much at all?
Yeah, May and June are not, it's not peak season. Like I said, it's not summer when everybody's travelling. It's not summer holidays. It's not school holidays. So, you know, a lot of operators are not going to be expecting to see peak times. But at the same time, like I said, it being winter, people in the south, people in Melbourne and you know, other southern areas where it's getting cold are going to start to think about going up north to Queensland, to the north of WA, into the regions where it's warmer. So, yeah, it's going to be hard. It's going to be a hit for sure, which is a real shame.
And just finally, I mean, you speak to tourism operators, I imagine, during the course of your work, Ben. How have they been feeling the last little while, not just during this fuel situation that we're currently experiencing, but has it been tough for the last few years?
Yeah, I think it has. Not so much the last few years, but probably about the last year or so. And obviously this fuel cost is a major drama. You know, Australians love to travel, and Australia is still a popular travel destination. It's still rebounding in some ways since the COVID-19 pandemic and the associated closures. But it is a popular destination, and people have been coming over, and they do spend a lot of money and a lot of time when they come to Australia. So there's a lot of positive news, but at the same time, in the last year or so, there's been a lot of elements that have made it harder for Australians to travel and now harder for international travellers as well. So there's a little bit of concern out there, a little bit of worry, which there always is, isn't it? And that's warranted completely. And, you know, people are certainly hoping to see some more positive signs in the next few months.
Well, thank you very much for having a chat with us, giving us a bit of a rundown. Ben Groundwater, freelance travel writer, appreciate your time.
No worries. Thanks a lot, Dave.
And we got some messages coming through on airfares and what people might expect in the next few months on Hack's Instagram. Someone says, raising fares like we already don't have some of the most expensive domestic flight costs in the whole world. Another person saying, watch the fuel crisis getting resolved, but the prices staying the same. That's my tip. And another person saying, an opportunity to squeeze the consumer for a few extra bucks. Not a lot of sympathy for the airlines that I'm seeing on Hack's Instagram or on the text line either. We've actually got Nina on the line with us from Coffs Harbour. Nina, how often are you using these regional flights? If you're in Coffs, are you often catching planes from there?
Yeah, so I'm currently in Coffs and I go to Melbourne quite frequently because that's where my family is. But I usually go to Ballina or Gold Coast just because it's too expensive to go from Coffs. And I've spoken to, you know, local people, and they said that it's only really been a thing in the past few years for it to be quite expensive post-COVID, because a lot of airlines discontinued, like Tiger Airlines and whatnot. So it sort of became, yeah, less competition. And so it's really expensive to fly from Coffs. So
yeah.
I know that now with these, you know, cuts, it'll definitely get way more expensive as the demand will go up.
And what does it mean for you? I mean, does it mean you see your family less? That's like pretty big impact.
Yeah, it definitely does make me, you know, consider it, because, yeah, it's all just costs, you know, even just, you know, driving to Ballina, that's another cost as well, you know. I'm definitely not going to be flying from Coffs, but, you know, having to drive, you know, 2 hours away to the airport, or 3 hours away to Gold Coast is, it's a significant cost.
Yeah.
And then paying for parking as well.
It all adds up. It all adds up, Nina. And we've got people on the text line now saying, yeah, a lot of our travel in country areas, it's not for holidays. It's not to just go and hang out with people and have fun. It's to go visit family, or it's to go to medical appointments. So, yeah, can really appreciate just how tough it is at the moment. Thank you so much for speaking with us. I really appreciate it. We're going to talk about something else now.
Hack.
It's a bizarre situation. We have all the ingredients we need for a thriving local industry.
On Triple J.
But it's kind of related. Biofuels. There's a fair bit of talk about them at the moment as this fuel crisis continues. And we're looking for new ways to secure our energy. They can be used in cars, they can be used in planes, and some people reckon we should be using a lot more of them. So, should Australia be producing more biofuels, and exactly what are they? Hack political reporter Evelyn Manfield's been taking a look.
Up in the tablelands in far north Queensland, Liam Wallace spends his days harvesting sugarcane.
During the season, so between about May and December, it's pretty flat out, so we're looking at 14 hours a day most days.
And these days, everyone wants to talk to him about turning it into fuel.
Yeah, it's definitely something everyone's pretty excited for at the moment. To grow sugarcane for ethanol is a lot easier to grow than sugarcane for sugar, because we don't have to worry about sugar content within the cane, so we can effectively harvest it all year round.
Okay, before we get too carried away, you might be wondering, what even are biofuels? Well, they're made from organic materials like sugarcane, corn and canola. Those crops can turn into biodiesel to run trucks and machinery, sustainable aviation fuel for planes, or ethanol, which can be blended with petrol.
We're already using E10. E10, if you're going to the petrol station, that's ethanol mixed with fuel.
Associate Professor Raman Dayan is an energy specialist at the University of New South Wales and reckons biofuels could be a bigger part of the energy mix.
We can increase that volume percentage.
And according to the industry body, that could improve how long our fuel reserves last.
Based on our capacity that we currently have, we could add around 10 days to what we currently have, which is quite substantial.
They also say they have the ability to pretty much double ethanol production. Australia actually has a lot going for it when it comes to making biofuels, but we haven't really lent into it.
We are also exporting a lot of the feedstock that is used for making biofuel to Europe. So if we kept those sort of feedstocks within Australia, that allows us to really convert this to fuel.
And that's something that's been annoying a bunch of politicians in Canberra, like Bob Catter.
We are the biggest exporters, arguably, of sugar, and the biggest exporters of grain amongst the three or four biggest exporters in the world. Guess where you get ethanol from? Grain and sugar.
That's him speaking in Parliament recently.
But here we are in a most precarious situation and nothing is being done.
And Nationals MP Anne Webster says it's a big focus in her community in regional Victoria too.
We grow vast hectares, thousands of hectares of canola, and that canola, 70% of it is currently shipped to Europe to turn into biofuel, so biodiesel to be exact.
The government knows this is a problem.
If we've learned anything from the last month and a bit, it's that cleaner and cheaper fuels, sovereign capacity, refining, manufacturing, these things are more important than ever.
That's Treasurer Jim Chalmers the other day, and Transport Minister Catherine King has also complained about it.
The fact that we grow canola here, then we ship it overseas, turn it into sustainable aviation fuel and then buy it back
is nuts.
So the government's spending more than $1 billion to try and develop the industry.
In our view, we should actually be having that low carbon liquid renewable diesel. We should be able to generate that here.
As the minister just mentioned, sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF as they like to call it, is a big part of this conversation because of how much fuel planes use. So it could play a growing role in energy security and decarbonisation moving forward. But
we don't have any sustainable aviation fuel facility in Australia. There is a facility being built in Brisbane. There is another project happening in Melbourne, but this would take a few more years for this to be operational.
And it's much more expensive, which would likely lead to flights costing more. Associate Professor Raman Dayan agrees cost is a barrier for biofuels generally.
The costs are still high, but given how oil price and every other supply chain shocks are also changing the pricing, biofuel price margin compared to fossil fuel, that gap is decreasing.
Hack on Triple J.
Evelyn Manfield reporting there, and lots of messages coming through on biofuels right now. Someone saying, don't farm fuel, farm solar and wind. Electrification's the answer, so we can save the fuel for what we really need it for, heavy machinery, plastics and other products. Another person, Craig from Brisbane, saying F1 cars actually run on 50% biofuel and 50% electricity. Interesting. Adam saying biofuels are only good with early model diesel motors but will not work with later model ones. It's tough for me as it's really cheap to use and can visit your local fish and chip shop to get it, which is pretty convenient. Have to think if you've got a good fish and chip shop near you, you've got to say. And someone else says, I think there's been a lack of biofuel investment as a result of fossil fuel lobbyists earning their paychecks. All right, we're going to move on.
Hack!
If you're not using AI to find the best deals, you should be.
On Triple J.
We're switching focus now and we're going to talk about AI, but in a way we haven't discussed it before. And that's the impact that it could have on what you wear. Fashion. Because we know that it is having a massive impact in other areas, in tech jobs we talked about recently, sex toys, which we're going to talk about in the next few weeks. One area is your wardrobe that you might not be thinking of. There are ways it's sneaking in. If you could get your favourite clothes on a hectic discount, but you were using AI to do it, would you? I'd love to get your feedback on this. Maybe you already are. 0439757555. Well, Ayushi Badwa is a fashion systems expert and lecturer at RMIT, and she's been looking into this. Ayushi, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Thank you for having me.
Can you talk us through how AI is being used in online fashion here? Like, what is the mechanism?
So we're seeing different areas where AI is revolutionizing things in the back end. We're seeing new trial-on apps coming in where the garments you can try, so it's no more like, you know, those websites where it kind of looks like your face has been stickered on the outfit, but the outfit actually takes shape of your body and you can feel the drape and see the drape. Another one that is happening is with the pricing, which is quite interesting because it's happening for consumers and retailers. So retailers don't have to actively collect that data and analyze it because AI can make it easy for them. And then for consumers, you can tag a product in your bot agent service tool. And, well, you can say, let's say, I am happy to pay $40 for this. So that is something, the price range of an item. You can set that and AI bot will ping you saying, hey, this product that you wanted is in this price range. Do you want me to buy for you or do you want to initiate? So it depends on the preferences that you have set.
Right. And is this only for major retailers or for smaller outlets as well?
So I think Google has started this. It came out in 2025 updates that they have launched their AI space. And the trial's already beginning in US. So you're seeing people already using these apps. So it's not far off that other countries will start seeing the application of this.
Okay, that's really, really interesting. So does that mean people could start to see more affordable clothes?
It kind of depends, right? It can go two ways. And because right now we're just seeing a very initial trial phase, so we don't exactly have a data or like a pattern what's occurring, but it can go two ways. Firstly, where if I would have got, let's say, for that $40 prize item that I suggest, I'm happy to pay that. What if it was supposed to come to $20 when there was those sales that consumers used to traditionally wait for? So probably I'm not going to wait for that time. So there goes the money, which is like, that's my money, which is available in my pocket. So please take that. I don't need the $20 discount. So it depends whether, you know, like it completely depends. If they want to create an urgency for you to buy, it might not come down. In fact, you may get like an alert of inventory levels being low. If you really want it, you buy it now. So you can see it both ways. It can go down, it can go up. We just have to see. The study that was happening in US had price up and down for 2 weeks in the cart items. Sometimes it was 17% down, but sometimes it was high as well.
That's really interesting. This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Ayushi Badwar, a fashion systems expert at RMIT, and we're talking about AI and its use in buying clothes, I guess. I mean, Ayushi, do you expect that in the years ahead we're just going to see people use bots to shop for them, that whole process of being online and searching things out, that's just going to be eliminated and it's all going to be done for us?
Definitely. I there's no doubt in my mind, understanding how we have opted for platformization and we all love online shopping. Now it's a second language. Like, we want to buy something, we jump on our browser and start comparing prices and features and things. So that's become the default. Nobody goes to a physical marketplace and let me just go to 10 different stores, compare the prices and see how it looks. No, it's all about convenience and saving time, because we want time for other things. So AI applications, such bot tools, will give us that time. And I mean, there's other things in here as well, right? It's about shopping patterns and convenience. So, I mean, AI styling tools will start recommending things as well, which is pretty soon, because it's already analyzing the things that you click on your feed. And then it curates and predicts that this person's going to like this sort of clothing item. So now the ads are not, okay, these are my 10 big peaks of the season, show everybody these 10 peaks in, you know, the ads, but ads going to be personalized for you and me. We're going to see different things.
Yeah. I mean, we're hearing from people right now. Georgina on the text line says, I think this is effed. She says people need to grow a bit of a conscience and stop trying to buy fast fashion for even cheaper while also supporting toxic AI. Yeah, there would be a lot of people who do feel a bit strange about this, Ayushi, and also worried about the environmental impact of all of this, because we know fast fashion has a huge, huge impact on the environment already. Is it set to get worse?
Look, I would say it depends how we use technology as businesses, as systems, as enterprises. Is it driven by a capitalistic sense of revenue growth? I would say yes, because none of the technological tools are being designed to reduce consumption. A byproduct of this could be, when you see yourself trying on clothes, you may get a bit better than, you know, just visualizing yourself in those clothings, which is current pictures that we see online. But I would say that would this increase impulse buy? There's definitely a very big chance of that.
Yeah.
So I do see the impact rolling out really in high consumption, especially for a country like Australia, you know, and US as well. Like, they're both competing with each other every year with like marginal difference in their high capita per, you know, consumption of fashion items.
It'll definitely be interesting to see how this all plays out. And you've got a really interesting piece in The Conversation that people can go and read on this exact issue. Ayushi Badwar, fashion systems expert and lecturer at RMIT, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Thank you for having me.
And someone on the text line now kind of posing the same question. Will this be more sustainable? Will it make people only buy on demand, meaning less garments are made, and only make garments that are needed? Yeah, I mean, that is quite possible, I guess. Someone else saying, I would let AI dress me. Yeah, I think I would actually, to be honest. Look, that is all we've got time for on Hack for now.